I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about giving circles. We're going to discuss what giving circles are and how they hope to leverage increased impact in philanthropy. My guests are Karen Holley, Vice President of the Board of Directors, Impact 100, Greater Indianapolis, Sarah Pugh, a new member of Impact 100 and Director of External Affairs for Volunteers of America of Indiana, also a 2017 Impact 100 grant recipient, and Jenna Spurrier, founding member of Impact 100 and current board member. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, Facebook is No Limits WFYI, Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about giving circles today. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Karen Holley. She is Vice President of the Board of Directors for Impact 100, Greater Indianapolis. Sarah Pugh, a new member of Impact 100 and Director of External Affairs for Volunteers of America of Indiana, which was a 2017 Impact 100 grant recipient. And Jenna Spurrier, a founding member of Impact 100 and current board member. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Certainly. It's good to have you all here. So we probably ought to start with some basics. We've done shows on giving circles before, and in fact on Impact 100. But I think revisiting, I wish the audience was always taking notes when we were having these conversations, but that does not happen. They actually like to just listen and enjoy. So I'm going to start with you, Karen. Talk to me a little bit about what a giving circle is.
So a giving circle is an opportunity for people to pull their money together to give to an organization, a charitable organization. It's an opportunity for them to have a hands-on experience, and it's in the case of Impact 100, it's an opportunity for them to make the decision on how their money is used in a democratic process.
Walk me through what that process is.
So in the case of Impact 100, we have members, and those members can participate in committees. And those committees help decide what nonprofits will continue on to the next phase. And so we have a four-part process by which the women who are a part of these committees would review letters of intent and then whittle those down to those who would write a grant. They would look at those and decide who they would want to actually look at as a site visit. And then they would vote on which one would be the representative for the five area focus groups that we have. So in June, we have a dinner. And at that dinner, there are five nonprofits who have 7 minutes to make a presentation. And after that presentation, the women vote. And whoever wins that vote receives the award of $100,000. And Sarah can talk about that experience.
Yeah, well, and I'm going to get to Sarah eventually. We will talk about the recipients and how that works. I'd like to talk with Jenna for a moment. Since you were one of the founding members, what was the impetus behind creating Impact 100?
Well, my friend Kelly Norwalk had been vacationing in Florida, and she met some women who are a part of the Pensacola group, which now has 1,100 members. That's our goal.
So it's Impact 1,100?
Well, what's so nice about having more members is that they can give more grants. So yeah, we have the five focus areas just like they do, but they actually give two grants to each one.
Oh.
So there's more people each year, more groups that are able to receive grants. And she did further research, and I mean, she put so much effort into it. She met up with another lady, Donna Oaklack, and they have completely different circles of women that they were able to bring in together for our first year. And I just remember going to Kelly's house, and it was gorgeous, of course, and big lunch. And she said, bring your checkbook. So I did.
Okay.
And I kind of wrote the check and explained it later.
So, and in terms of that, you start out presumably with 100 people. Mm-hmm. How much money was the goal? Well, I know what the goal is now. What was it when you started? Was it
Kelly?
Was it,
Kelly wanted to have at least 100, and we had 152, I believe.
That first time.
Mm-hmm.
That first time. So, you know, the point then is to create kind of an economy of scale. Was that and be able, instead of having your $1,000 disappear into a larger, to make a gift by combining all of these women's voices and their checkbooks.
Well, to me, the appeal was it's something I don't know if I'll ever win the lottery or not, but I don't think it's something I'll ever be able to do, is to give a $100,000 high impact grant on my own. But I feel like I have now 13 times.
Okay, so you've been able to own all of that and the feeling that comes with it.
What really changed me was I went to Austin and I met the lady, Rebecca Powers, who founded the organization. And she had me meet her at a Ben and Jerry's ice cream mm-hmm. store. And I didn't know why. I thought it was a unique place to meet. And she said, everybody here is homeless mm-hmm. who's working here. And she said that was their very first grant, was they had runaway children who needed to get a job and they were homeless. They had reasons why they didn't feel like they could go back home. And they partnered with another local group that was helping these runaways and homeless people and got them a job with Ben and Jerry's, with a partnership with them. Mm-hmm. And that made me know I really wanted to do it.
Okay. Sarah, you've entered this process from the opposite end, right? As someone rather who, at least initially, was not writing the checks and you know, providing the philanthropy. You were seeking it, right? As part of Volunteers for America. What was your proposal?
Our proposal was to help with the expansion of our residential addictions treatment program. For women and children, called Fresh Start Recovery Center. Mm-hmm. And it really, the proposal was to help us expand so we could have, instead of one unit of 15 beds, we could have four units and be able to serve 60 women instead of 15 women at one time.
And how much money were you seeking to do that?
Well, the Impact 100, of course, is $100,000, mm-hmm. but it's about a $500,000 project, mm-hmm. and it was we really needed that $100,000 to make it happen as soon as possible, because there's such a huge need in the community for women to come and have treatment with us, because our wait list is over 100 women long.
So walk me through the process. I mean, in terms of applying for this, how did you go about doing that?
So they have a lot of really great information on their website, and the first step is a letter of interest. And actually, for this year, their letter of interest is due on the 11th of January, so very soon. So if you're a nonprofit mm-hmm. and you're listening and you're interested, check it out immediately. And you fill out a letter of interest, which is a more broad information about what your proposal will be about, and more information about your agency in general. And then that goes to the committees, and you wait to hear back from the committees if you're invited to fill out a full proposal. And so for us, when we were invited to fill out a full proposal, the committee chair for the family committee contacted us and let us know that we've been invited. And then also it was really great because she gave us some tips on how to really have a very strong proposal. And it was very clear that basically the folks on the committees were champions of everyone they're asking to do a full proposal. They want everybody to be successful, and they want everyone to have a really strong application. And it was really neat to have that type of interaction, because usually as a grant writer, you send off your application and you get back a yes or a no with nothing in between. Mm-hmm. And so this is a really unique situation. So so we submitted our full proposal, and then it was narrowed down to who gets site visits. And we were invited for a site visit. And so as many people on the committee that were able to come that day for the site visit came. And took a tour, talked to our staff, talked to some of our clients, got a better idea of what we were doing and the true impact that they could have if they chose us as the, if they selected us for that committee to be one of the top five to, to go to the dinner. And the support didn't stop there. So once we were chosen as the top in that committee area, more of the committee members came and met with us and helped us work on the speech, the 7-minute speech that we're able to give. And so because I had all that interaction with the committee members, I was able to see how much they really cared, how much they really were champions of our cause and were interested in and truly the impact that we were able to have, and understood, you know, how much this could really support the women and children and the families in our community. So so I chose to become a member because of how great everyone was that was on the committees that supported us so much.
Can I ask, were you the one who had to do the 7-minute speech?
I sure wasn't. Luckily, that was not me.
How nerve-wracking is that? Is it because, you know, you normally don't think, I'm going to have six figures riding on how I negotiate the next few minutes of my life.
Right. So to even the playing field, no one giving the speeches, you can't have slideshows and you can't have any kind of extra extra fun visuals or anything. And we had two speakers. We had Dr. Benjamin, Tara Benjamin, who's at IU Health, who's on our board and also partners and supports us with our Fresh Start Recovery Center and the women that we work with. And Shannon Schumacher, who's our vice president of behavioral health services. And so they split up that time and, I mean, practiced ahead of time and worked out, you know, what they were going to say. And again, spoke in front of the committee members, like did some practice rounds of what they were going to say. And then they were, the committee was really helpful in saying, you know, I think this is a bigger point to make than this one. I think you can focus more in this direction than that. And that will be more impactful to the audience because they know the audience, they're friends, you know, they're on the committee, they're on the committees with folks, so they understand what they're kind of looking for and what has touched them in the application. And so it is nerve-wracking, but it's also a really special, amazing moment because then you have a whole room of, you know, hundreds of people celebrating you. And the other really nice thing is that the other agencies that made it to the top of their committee area that also gave a 7-minute speech will get some funding. It won't be the $100,000, but the residual money. So everybody walks away from that evening.
If you make it to the dinner, you know you're going to get something. The question is how much?
Correct. Right.
So everyone who gets supported. If you're just joining us, we are talking about Impact 100 specifically and giving circles in general. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Karen or Jenna, either one of you, we've talked about these five categories. Probably ought to talk about what they are. One of them, obviously, is family. What are the other areas?
So there's arts and culture, there's education, there's environment, family, as she said, and health and wellness.
Okay, and are those unchanging? Is that every year, or do you revisit them from time to time and think, well, maybe we ought to have a category?
So those are the framework by which Impact 100 was created, and right now that's something that we have stuck with. Environment has kind of changed in over the years, but those five have been what we've done for the last 12 years.
Jenna, do you have the freedom to alter that, or is it part of working within a national network?
Well, we're not a franchise. Yeah. We don't have to stick by certain guidelines, but I've always found that you should do what the successful ones do. So we try to model ourselves after the biggest groups.
Okay, but are there places that do deviate? I'm just curious because
I think all of them have differences.
Yeah, because I think place sometimes makes a difference. Indiana has some challenges that Florida doesn't, and vice versa.
But I think what creates those focus areas are those things that will help create a community by which it's healthy and civic minded. So those are the reason that those five focus areas were created. And so that's kind of why we've stuck to those.
We are talking about giving circles. It's a type of participatory philanthropy that has roots in the U.S., but now is enjoying a wave of popularity. It's where members actively donate money and or time and collectively choose recipients. We're also talking about Impact 100, which is one of the best local examples of a giving circle. My guests are Karen Holley. She is Vice President of the Board of Directors for Impact 100 of Greater Indianapolis. Sarah Pugh, a new member of Impact 100 and Director of External Affairs for Volunteers of America of Indiana, which was a 2017 Impact 100 grant recipient. And Jenna Spurrier, a founding member of Impact 100 and current board member. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about giving circles and Impact 100 specifically. My guests are Karen Holley. She's vice president of the board of directors for Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis. Sarah Pugh, a new member of Impact 100 and director of external affairs for Volunteers of America of Indiana, which was a 2017 Impact 100 grant recipient, and Jenna Spurrier, who is a founding member of Impact 100 and a current board member. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881, send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Okay, so we know at the end of the process, we've got these five people, or five groups, organizations that are making pitches at the dinner for $100,000. That's the end of the process. How many people apply at the beginning? How large a pool of recipients are you trying to winnow down here?
So it varies from year to year. In December, our grants committee has a call out to invite nonprofits across central Indiana to come and find out more information about the grant opportunities and what the process is. Typically, we see about 50 to 60 nonprofit organizations actually apply. They have to self-select themselves into one of those five focus area groups. And so based on how they self-select is how much competition they have, if you will, in order to become the finalist for one of those committees.
So what are the areas that are the most clogged? I mean, do you get most of it in arts and culture or most of it in
I would say you would see it probably in family and health and wellness are probably the most popular.
Okay, and is it 50 to 60 fairly consistent, or is it sometimes more than that?
In the beginning, I would say that it was definitely more than that. But I think now that nonprofits in the community have a greater understanding of what they're applying for, and the fact that we're asking for outside-the-box thinking in terms of innovative ideas for $100,000, you're not applying for $20,000 or $50,000, you're actually applying for $100,000. So we want to know what it is that you have that we could support that at that $100,000 minimum range.
Jenna, is the, you know, in the Impact and Impact 100, is that sort of a double play on words? Obviously, you want to have the impact of the money landing somewhere, but also you want the impact, the project, to be one that has impact.
That is where the name came from. And what it's saying is when you're applying for a grant as a nonprofit, it needs to be something that you wouldn't have in your normal budget. And we want to know that if you didn't win the grant from us, that you have plan B, you have somewhere else that you would use for it. It's not going to make or break you as an organization. You don't use it for just salary and budgets, which I think makes it even more exciting for the members to know that this is something that the organization would not have done had it not been for us. It's almost like when you see a new wing added onto a hospital with somebody's name on it. It's something that we've done. Like when we were able to help out, a local Parkinson's organization for boxing, Rock study that Scott Newman had helped found here in Indianapolis. It's now an international organization, and they're franchised across the globe. And it all started with us helping them be able to get it off the ground and have their very own gym.
How did you select, or how do you select the members of Impact 100, the folks who make these decisions?
I guess the check has to clear.
Okay. So there's no barrier then. Basically, if someone is listening to this and decided, hey, I'd like to get involved, I'd like to see if my thousand could leverage $100,000 worth of impact.
That's absolutely correct. There's no requirements other than the membership of $1,000, and that can be done by going to the website and getting the information.
Okay, and how many? You say the first year you had 152,000. Was that 152 members, or was it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And people can make quarterly payments, monthly payments, pay by credit card, and we do have, I think, over half of the members give more than 1,000. What's nice about our organization to me is we're all equal. We all have one vote. Okay. So it doesn't matter how much you give. If you give over 1,000, it goes towards what we call our Friends Fund. And the Friends Fund is where we have the items that need to be covered. We don't have any paid staff. We're not a brick and mortar group. None of the giving circles are, as far as I know. But obviously you do have postage, website cost, credit card fees, transactional charges out there. So I'd say a lot of women probably average $1,100 that they give, knowing that $100 would go towards the administrative costs.
What if you can't write a $1,000 check even over the course of a year and you want to be involved in some fashion? Is there a way to do that?
We have a lot of members who will help sponsor members. We have a scholarship program where members give money to that, and it helps out younger people get involved who maybe don't feel comfortable doing the $1,000. I will say, if you have a calculator and you divide it out, you can do just $85 a month. And any more, that seems like you can't even eat dinner out for that much. But we do have scholarship programs, and there are a lot of ladies who also might have corporate donors who will help them out at work. You could have a matching program, or maybe just somebody who wants to help out their employees get more involved in the community.
Sarah, yeah.
There's also a shared membership option, which is how I was able to join, which you can join with one other person, two or three other people, so four people total.
And each of you puts in $250.
Exactly. But what that means is we get only one vote at that dinner that night.
Okay.
So, but we are able to participate in all of the committees as we want to, and anything like that. The only difference is really the individual vote. So for me and three other people who all work in nonprofits, who have very limited budgets, it was our opportunity to start to get engaged, to dip our toe in to see if we, would want to continue to do it. And then it also has allowed us to have more social time together and to meet other Impact 100 members, because there's Impact 100 events.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more as the most recent convert, I think, to this cause. Sarah, what pulled you in? Because there are any number of ways, causes you can get involved. What was the appeal of this one for you?
So like I said earlier, one of the big appeals was just getting to know some of the members and seeing how enthusiastic and genuine they were about supporting our community and really being able to be a part of the solution. So I was inspired by their enthusiasm. And I loved the idea of really getting to learn about other agencies in our community by being on a committee myself and being able to read their applications. So that was one part of it, was the women that were already in Impact 100 and being able to learn about a lot of agencies by being on a committee. Another part of it was really being able to connect with the friends that I did a membership with and connect with the women at the Impact 100 events. So there was event, there have been several events already. There was one at Christmas that I went to where there was even a new member orientation so we could get more familiar with the whole process. Another part of it, and like has been shared earlier, is the idea that where I'm giving my money, will be able to see a much bigger impact than if I gave my $250 to an individual place. So to be a part of that bigger, very large impact.
We are talking about Giving Circles and Impact 100 today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Listener Janet didn't want to go on the air, but asked the question. She'd like to know if Giving Circles is an old idea or a new idea. Seems a little like what communities or even churches would do before large agencies came on the scene. Is it showing appeal to younger givers? I'll throw that one to, that's actually a couple of questions, but I'll throw that one to Jenna first. Anyone's welcome to chime
Definitely an older idea, yes. That's been going on for, I don't know, the history, probably since before documented history, yes.
So Giving Circles has, Impact 100 itself was created in 2001 by a young lady named Wendy Steele in Cincinnati. And so as it, as other women travel, they became attracted to that. And so now there's over 40 Impact 100s, as you stated, all over the nation and in Australia. So that is a true statement. I think Giving Circles, I think if you read the information, you'll see that Indiana has a number of Giving Circles. A number of them not only may have opportunities in the religious realm, but also there are some that focus on specific diseases. So there's some that focus on cancer and things like that. Some of our members, the founding members, have gone on to create their own. So they've learned information from this Impact 100 Giving Circle and have gone on. But, you know, we treat it as an opportunity to address needs in our community. And so those are things that we're all very supportive of.
I want to ask you a question about the sort of a Malcolm Gladwell tipping point kind of question, too, because we started this conversation, I think it was Jenna mentioned the 1100 down in
Pensacola.
In Pensacola, yeah. I'm wondering, because it sounds like from what Sarah is saying and in different ways each of you, that a large part of the appeal here isn't just, you know, that you give the money. It's the interaction. It's the sense that you develop relationships and that you share in this idea of creating a community. Is there a point at which the Giving Circle becomes too large to create
yes.
that? And what do you do about
it's
that?
It's funny Jenna? You said that. It's a problem everyone, I think, would love to have. They are now limiting their members in Austin and Pensacola. So they, if you don't get your money in before that number's reached, you don't get to be a member that year, which, like I said, I don't know if that's something that we would do or not, because, as you said earlier, no, there isn't a set rule book that we all follow. We are very closely related in how we handle our Impact 100s. We've even changed ours since we started on different ideas. For example, on our first year, we gave the $152,000 all to the PCAR clinic for them to have on-site a pharmacy for them to be able to have for their patients that came in. I think it was in year four that we made the decision to divide the remaining, give one $100,000 grant or two $100,000 grants, and then divide the remainder amongst the other finalists. And it's fluid. You know, maybe we'll vote to make a change in the future, too. But like I said, I've always looked at these other Impact 100 models across the country. We've had conventions, actually, where we all get together. One of them was here in Indianapolis, I think, about maybe 7 years ago. And we learned so much from them and what's making them successful. That's how we, if we're going to make a change, we're going to go by what's working for other ones.
Have you thought, I mean, is there any precedent or is there any thought to saying, okay, we're getting too big, we're going to create, a Giving Circle or an Impact 100 Carmel, an Impact 100 Noblesville, an Impact 100 Greenwood, Plainfield, you know.
So around. Right now we've been able to, over the last 12 years, give to 14 $100,000 grants that have totaled over $1.9 million. But we actually want to get to the point where we actually give five $100,000 grants in 1 year. And so I think when we get to that point, that's something that we would discuss. But right now we're still growing and we've given at least one every year. And our goal is to actually give two this year.
What are the things we've talked a bit about these categories and all of that? What are the things that have to be in that initial letter that will appeal, that will get an invitation to proceed further? Are there certain criteria that I'll throw that to Jenna or Sarah that are in there? I mean, one of them is obviously the idea that it can't be, you can't, as you'd said earlier, you can't be soliciting funds, I'm assuming, just to keep the lights on or probably to finance debt or anything right. like that. But what are the things that are the most appealing that the committee members tend to look at?
So I don't know that that's fair to Sarah because she hasn't been on that side.
Well,
of
I said
the
Jenna
bit.
Or Sarah, but yeah.
on that side
but
of
I'm
the
presumably she's starting to weigh proposals now, right?
Well, we actually won't start until another week or so,
okay.
Because they are nonprofits have till January the 11th to actually submit them.
Okay.
And I will say that it varies from year to year and what the women are actually looking for. But I will say that if you have a clear description of what it is you want to do, that is very helpful. I think people get excited when they are asked to write a letter of intent and they have that description in their head. But if it doesn't flow on paper that another person who's not familiar with what you do can understand, then it becomes difficult for us to ask you to advance to the next level.
How many people make it beyond that letter of intent generally, or how many organizations? If you start out with, we'll use, to make the math easy, 50, that you start out with, how many get an invitation to the next stage?
I would say that, as you said before, it's not proportional between the five committees. But I would say that if a committee received 10, so I'm going to change your math for you.
Well, that's
if
10 a committee, for five. Yeah. Yeah, each one of them. It still
works. If they received 10, I would say probably 6 would be asked to actually write the grant proposal. It would go down to about 2 or 3 that would be asked for a site visit. Down to the one who would actually be the nonprofit that would be asked to come to the dinner.
And how many people, when you do those site visits, I mean, you point out this is an all-volunteer effort, right?
I think,
how do you get all of the committee members to clear
I think
their
one thing,
to
too,
that
has come out of all of these giving circles is just the knowledge of the nonprofits that are in our community that so many of us never knew existed at all. And if somebody submits a letter of interest, even just at that point, there might be somebody who reads it, and whether the nonprofit makes it to the next step or not, that lady might have a connection with that group and either donate or begin donating her time as well. And that's what we found across the country. Is even me personally, I know when I go to the annual dinner, I end up giving money to the one who doesn't win as well.
Oh, so you end up making additional gifts on,
yes.
on top of that. So it's worth obviously trying to get to
in yes, the, that's, in the I, door I think, to that I think that's my then. Point is that yeah. if we always look for something that's not in your budget, it's like Karen said, outside the box of your normal realm of what your annual budget is going to include, and it's going to be something that whether you get the grant or not, it's not going to change your daily operations.
Okay, so it's got to be something special then mm-hmm. that focuses. I mean, is there a bias at some level towards transformational things? Like it sounds like the gift that Volunteers of America really was, you're looking at a direct impact on people's lives.
Well, I think what was so good about theirs was that, like she said, they had other money too. And that helps us know that whether they win from us or not, that they have other sources. And that makes it even better to know the sustainability of that project.
We are talking about Giving Circles and Impact 100 here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Karen Holley. She is Vice President of the Board of Directors for Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis. Sarah Pugh, she is a new member of Impact 100 and Director of External Affairs for Volunteers of America of Indiana, which was a 2017 Impact 100 grant recipient. And Jenna Spurrier, a founding member of Impact 100 and current board member. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about giving circles in general and Impact 100 specifically here on No Limits today. My guests are Karen Holley. She is vice president of the board of directors for Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis. Sarah Pugh, a new member of Impact 100 and director of external affairs for Volunteers of America of Indiana, which was a 2017 Impact 100 grant recipient. And Jenna Spurrier, a founding member of Impact 100 and current board member. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So I'm going to ask a question. Obviously, a large part of this is the involvement. And that, does everyone who is a member of Impact 100 serve on a committee?
No.
Jenna? No?
That's one of the things I liked about it. And, of course, here I am on the board. So I say that to begin with and never follow through. We have a membership list that is not published. We do not share information with anybody. You can be as private or public as you want to be with your Impact 100 membership. And you can write a check or make a credit card donation and make your vote by mail and never show up at a thing. So it's as much or as little as somebody wants to be involved.
Okay, so how many people then overall serve on the committees? Because obviously it sounds like if no one did that, your plan would fall apart.
But correct. I would say that we probably have about 60% of the members who actually participate in the committees. They select their first, second, and third choice, and then we try to accommodate their times, the different times of the day that they meet, and they are sent out and invited to attend the committee meetings.
So, Sarah, which committee are you serving on, and why? Was that your first choice, or was it?
I'm not sure which committee I was put on yet. I did my top three ranking.
Which three?
Which they were really based on the time of day that they were meeting. So I believe health was my first because that was like an evening time where some of the times are weekday evenings and a few of them are like weekday lunchtime. And I figured and like one meeting is kind of on the north side of town and one meeting's kind of central. So I picked the one that was really, you know, located closer to my work at a time that I thought I could probably make the most meetings. So not very exciting way to choose. Mm-hmm. But for me, I wanted to not be in the family committee, not in the committee that my agency was in. And then I'm also on the board of another organization that might be applying. That would be in the environment section. So I chose to avoid those and then choose by what was the most convenient.
That raises another question. I want to get back to whether you guys are in committees, but are there guidelines in place? You know, in essence, what Sarah's saying is she didn't want to serve because it's conflict of interest. There.
Correct.
Do you have guidelines in terms of conflicts and all of that?
We do. At the first meeting of the committee meeting, you are asked to sign documentation and also state if you have any conflicts such that we can work them out to make sure that you can participate, but also that that there are no issues with your participation.
Okay. And how do you enforce that?
So the documentation is collected by the FAC chairs, and then it is brought before the grant committee. They work that through. So there's conversation that's had at that level, and if that can't be resolved at that issue at that level, it's taken to the board level.
Okay. Do you serve on a committee, Karen?
I have. I have actually served on all five of them.
All five.
Yes.
Okay. So you're a glutton for punishment.
I am. You get a little smarter as you get older.
Okay. But you're not serving now, is it? Do board members not serve on committees?
No, we actually all have an opportunity to volunteer. We actually haven't received that information. It'd be sent out on this Friday. But because Sarah is new, she will probably receive her first choice. As those who are experienced, we will probably get the second or third, depending on trying to help all of the new members get their first option.
Which was your favorite committee to serve on, or the area that spoke to you the most?
I don't know that I have a favorite. I would say that health and wellness, because that's an area that I work in, I think I was probably more passionate about. But I think when you see the others, and that's why I chose to try to look at an opportunity to be on all of the committees, you see different things and why they're important in a community.
Jenna, how about you? Have you you've done committee work before?
I have never served on a focus area committee.
Oh, okay.
I've been a member since day one, and I've been on the board twice now. And I think I will someday. It's not that I don't want to. I have just focused more on the committee on which I've served on the board. And I trust them. They do a great job. Mm-hmm. So I've loved every single finalist we've had.
Hey, so we've got a history now. We've talked about, 13, 14 years and nearly $2 million in grants that have been delivered over that time. That's a lot of proposals and a lot of not-for-profits that have been helped. I'm going to toss this one to Jenna and Karen, both of whom seem to have most of the history here. Which was the one that spoke to you the most, the one that you took the most satisfaction in and thought, you know, and in some ways I'll even narrow it further, think, boy, if Impact 100 did not exist, this would not have happened.
You have one?
Jenna?
Well,
Jenna's got one.
Rocksteady Boxing for me and Volunteers of America, and not just because Sarah's here, because I have just been... I don't even know what word to use, not amazed or floored, or it's unbelievable to me the opioid epidemic we have in our community, in our country, and anything we can possibly do to help that is another step closer to hopefully saving a life. My grandmother had Parkinson's, and so when I attended the dinner with the Rock City Boxing, and now then we went to the event that they hosted for us, and to see all of these Parkinson's survivors, punching the bags and many of them just falling right down on the ground and getting back up and saying, we're fine. And I bawled my eyes out at the dinner. And when we went to the location too, I thought, wow, if there's so many people who maybe could have survived longer or had a better standard of living if they'd had that night. And now to see it be international is just amazing.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Karen?
So for me, it would probably be Indy Reid. It was in 2007, so it was the first year I joined. I actually was on the committee, the education committee, that had an opportunity to, I got to follow it through the process. But I think the most interesting thing was that I think they were at a time when they were at survival in terms of they had lost their funding from the public library. And so they really needed this money not only to re-innervate themselves, but also to help the community. So Indy Reid's was probably my favorite.
What one was the most innovative that you've seen? That seemed the most out of the box that no one would have thought about, perhaps, in it, because part of this is also you do get around generally when you apply for grants, as I think Karen said at the top of the show, you get a yes or a no, and the communication's relatively antiseptic. Here, the personal connections matter a great deal, and that means you probably get some proposals that would not come through other sources. Jenna, you're leaning into the microphone. So
I'm trying to think. I mean, you say outside the box, and that was one of our winners, was outside the box. So
yep.
That's why I was laughing. But
I don't know that we really innovative. Outside the box is.
I think innovative, the right way to put innovative, is not trying to give any special hints out there, but knowing that we have our fewest applicants in the environment and the arts and culture. It's like Karen said, it's the nonprofit who picks the committee onto which they want to have the application submitted. So I'll say that. That's innovative to me. If I'm maybe thinking I'm a health and wellness person, but I find a way to make it arts and culture, that's innovative.
So that's the easier way to get into the room then, basically,
yes.
Because there are fewer applications.
But that doesn't mean that the committee is any less stringent on how they judge them. But I will say this, that nonprofits do come back the following year. So based on what Sarah said, it's one of those things where we are invested in these nonprofits, and so we will give them recommendations, and we have seen them come back. The Indy Parks Foundation, the MD Urban Acres, is an example. They actually won $100,000 on their third try. So it's something that nonprofits, when they, you know, find the right formula, it works.
Sarah, what were the toughest questions in the process to deal with?
Well, for me, for just having a background in grant writing, it's different writing for something like Impact 100 than a state grant or something. So it's always good to be clear and concise and make it easy to read for folks. But one thing that I found important, which isn't in my usual wheelhouse, is really emphasizing, like focusing on the families and kind of bringing it back down to the personal touch and the individuals that will be impacted. I was much more used to writing about like the global issues and how this affects that. But for Impact 100 and for women who are making a difference in our community, like this, it was important for us to write a grant that's talking about, you know, the neighbors that you'll be supporting and helping with this opportunity.
What, when they did the site visit, what was that process? What questions, what were the sorts of things that they were curious about?
Yeah. So, we have a lot of tours, and with this site visit, it was similar to that. So we usually start out in a meeting room and talking about the program a little bit more. And of course, these were women who have already read the proposal, but we give a broader understanding of what our agency is and how we fit into the framework of the opiate epidemic in our state and in central Indiana in particular. But what really I think affects people that come to see what we do is taking a tour on the floor where we have an active unit of the Residential Addictions Treatment, the Fresh Start Recovery Center, and seeing the kids playing in the playroom and talking to the mothers who we haven't planted there, who just happen to be there and are willing to talk to folks saying, this has saved my life. You know, if it wasn't for this opportunity, I don't know where I would be. And really seeing that that's a genuine, the direct genuine impact that it's having on people. So there's nothing that we can say or write in an application that really can take away from what you can get from a tour and from meeting people that were impacted directly.
What about, I'll throw this to Karen or Jenna, you know, with the meetings at where you have the 7-minute presentations and all of that, it strikes me that could be a little bit nerve-wracking, because my guess is if you've made it, any of the not-for-profits that have made it that far have a pretty good case to make. They can demonstrate that there is need, and one way to look at it, and I should say my sister runs a charitable foundation, and she's told me that everyone thinks it's great that you just get to give away money, and she says, not really, because for every group you say yes to, there are like 19 or 20 you say no to, and that's the part that's really hard, because you know you're not able to fund a lot of really worthy initiatives. How close are those votes, I guess, at the end, and are there ever anything resembling hard feelings or divisions about Jenna's nodding her head up and down.
Well, so, yeah. I just think it's really important to go in with the mindset that, like, you've heard about the focus area committees, knowing that they have done such a wonderful job to pick a finalist, that there's never going to be a bad winner. It's going to be a great winner, whoever we have. And I think probably 90% of the time, I go in thinking I'm going to vote for one group, and then I end up picking a different one. So I just keep an open mind. And like I said, we found, and this is across the country, that maybe some people will really fall in love. I remember I wanted Brooks Place to win one time, and that is a group for children with parents who have passed away, and it didn't win. And I was happy with the winner, that, you know, it was fine, but I then wrote them a $500 check that night. And I know some other people did too.
Karen.
So I was just going to say that it is. I think that's what we have that voting period where we try to ask the women for their ballots. And sometimes it's hard to get those ballots away from those women because they're still trying to make their decision on which one they're going to vote for.
Oh, so it's not a public thing where you throw up your hands or anything like that?
No, it's a ballot, and we actually don't release the numbers on how close the vote was. So that's something that we talked about. But also, as Jenna alluded to, there are people who make donations of not only their money, but their time. And then there's also the fact that many of those who are finalists can have the opportunity to apply again. So there is an opportunity for them to come back the following year and be the award recipient.
What do you, and I'm just curious about, is there like any sort of runoff or do they have to achieve a certain level of support to get it? Because in theory, I mean, let's assume you've got 100 votes, you got 5 worthy proposals, you could have it be 21, 20, 20, 20, 19, and well, that's a pretty evenly divided group.
We don't have 100% attendance at the annual dinner. Okay. We do allow people to do absentee ballots and send them in. We'd love for everyone to be voting. Yes, theoretically it could happen. We do have, just so everybody knows, this isn't, there are no members that are counting the votes. We have a counting firm who is officially doing that for us.
Okay. We're getting close on time here. We probably ought to talk a little bit. We've made references to the website. Probably ought to tell people where that website is right now.
It's impact100indy.org. And they can go on there and they can find out information about the grant process if there's a nonprofit, or they can go out and hit join if they're interested in finding out information about how to join and become a member.
And when do you start recruiting for the next class of members for Indianapolis?
Today.
Today. So people, if they are interested, can go on to the website as of today and say, I'd like to be a member.
And that would be for the 2019 membership.
Okay, and the criteria is the check has to clear, right? Kind of what you said.
Well, and like I said, we do the options of the quarterly, the monthly payments, matching gift from employers. So if people do start thinking about it today, I think it gives them plenty of time to be ready for the 2019 membership year.
Okay, and the goal is to have $1,000 per vote, right?
Well, the goal is to have 100 women or more every year, hopefully 200 to 300 next year.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to thank all of you for what has been a lively conversation. I'd like to thank my guests, Karen Holley, who is Vice President of the Board of Directors for Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis, Sarah Pugh, new member of Impact 100 and Director of External Affairs for Volunteers of America of Indiana. They were a 2017 grant recipient for Impact 100, and Jenna Spurrier, a founding member of Impact 100 and current board member. Also like to invite all of our listeners to come back on Thursday when we're going to talk about the ongoing controversy at the Indiana Department of Child Services. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.